Good morning and welcome. It is a brand new week. It is a brand new month. Oh my God, it's November already and we're downhill towards the end of the year. One of these, a friend of mine bought me one. It's a fidget cube. And for someone who has concentration problems and, you know, I doodle when I'm on the phone, I need to be doing two things at once. So this keeps me very busy. You press buttons, you move the little joystick. Got a switch that does nothing. You got a little rollerball mouse type thing. You've got little wheels. You've even got this wheel here, which is makes a noise. How cool is that? You know, I'll tell you what, this thing will probably bring me more joy than if you had to buy me something for 5,000 Rand. I'm a simple person. Good morning. It is a brand new week. It is a brand new month. And here to celebrate that, as well as the podcast awards, which happened over the weekend, is winner of one of those podcast awards, the great Lynn Jaffe. I've known Lynn for years.
Morning.
Thought we'd get her in here. How are you?
It's early.
It is early. Congrats, Mazel Tov, on the award.
Thank you very much.
Nice stuff.
Yeah. Podcaster of
the year. Sorry I woke you up so early.
Well, I actually slept over because it's actually traffic, you know.
Well, it's nice to see you. And you. We're going to talk a little bit about your award in a moment. We'll talk about a whole bunch of other things too. We got Dr. Hanan today. We've also got a guest joining us a little bit later on. I think it's all going to be very, very cool for the start of your week. If you're wondering where Leanne is, she lost her dad just a couple of days ago. So she's unfortunately taking this week off. So give her a break for a couple of days and we'll hopefully have her back next week. She's okay.
It's
a shit thing to happen, huh?
You can't work.
No.
It's just your whole life.
Well, she's got the funeral this week and all of that stuff. And
I know it.
You know, there. She doesn't want to, I don't have to deal with
me. You can't
act
as if. You know.
No, of course. Hell no. All right. So anything exciting happened over the weekend? Not for me. I spent the entire weekend doing nothing. And I haven't had one of those weekends for a long time. I often say I'm doing nothing and then something crops up. But I actually did nothing.
The best.
Lynn, it was so nice. I tidied up my house. I did a little bit of taking care of the garden. I went to the shops. I ate a lot of salad, and that was my whole weekend.
But you know what they say? When you know you're getting old and the phone rings on a Saturday night and you pray to God, it's not for you. It's getting there.
That's exactly what happened to me. So I was so excited. On Friday, one of my friends actually called me and said, listen, what are you doing? We're going out here or there. I said, there's just not a chance in hell. So I had a very healthy, happy weekend. I
got solitude.
Lots done. Yeah. Got lots done. So that was, we had a conversation just now before we went live about like introversion and extroversion, right? And that was the introvert me was busy this weekend. The extrovert me was kind of in hiding. Mm. And I think we're all both, right? Mm.
Well, like I said to you earlier, when I wrote, I've been trained as an extrovert to survive in the family because we were all, you know, narcissists raising narcissists. And lately, sort of in the last 5-7 years in writing and actually sitting down in a dark room having food passed under the door. And my friends would say, oh, but Lynn, you know, you missed the Dacha seminar and you missed the rave. This is, but you missed the sentence I wrote that took me 4 days to compile.
Yeah. Wow, yeah.
And it brings out a different aspect of you. It grounds.
Does it bother you when people say, are you an extrovert or an introvert? Because it irritates me now. I'm like, I'm both.
Oh, no, they get a clap.
Right? Yeah, it's both.
Well, it depends when. And in fact, Jung speaks about it's an orientation.
Jung, okay, let's get deep straight away.
CG. There's an orientation. So if I'm orientated to perform for the visitors, for example, we were pulled out of bed in the nights. Parents were in showbiz and we would have to do Following in Father's Footsteps at 2 a.m. on the piano. So, you know, you got to get
what
up.
What a childhood you must have had.
Oh, was it a childhood?
Raised like a veal.
And then you can just go in, if you go into, it's an interiority, I think, the introversion. Mm-hmm. I mean, you can get all, you know, I don't know if you could maintain your introversion for long because you're a public figure. You can't just go to gigs and
be surprised. Hey, I've got, again, the introvert part of me could very happily live in a cabin in the woods, have very little to do with anyone. But I think it's more of a fantasy than a reality. I do need people around me a lot of the time.
I didn't know before I wrote my novel that I could sit at a desk and focus. I've lost that. I've lost the ritual of it now.
Yeah, you've got like, you had ADHD before it was a thing.
You know, but do you know how many people are being diagnosed? Like middle-aged women have now got ADHD.
For sure.
They didn't know and they're taking pills and they feel so much better. There's no pill for what we've got.
Well.
Is there?
One of these days they're going to come up with something to sell us. Just you wait and see. It'll make us feel a little bit better. Speaking of middle-aged, I want to show you what Sophia Loren looks like. She's 90
she's
years
amazing.
Old. Have you got that picture, James? This woman is just, look at that.
No, she's amazing.
Okay, so there's that's her son and her granddaughter.
The smile looks better on her than on him somehow.
But, you know, there's something about her that is just, and she's aged very gracefully. She hasn't had like a lot of work done or any of that stuff. She's got good hair. I mean, if she's had some work done, that's also okay. Who the hell cares, right?
Do you know what they always said about Sophia? Her eyes are wrong, her nose is wrong, her mouth is wrong, but you put the whole thing together and she's magnificent. There's nothing specific.
Maybe that's it.
She's just put it together and, of course, the body.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, she's looking
well. Yeah, I mean,
I've
seen some 90s that are not so great, you know. This one, she's phenomenal.
She's amazing. She's the same age as my mom, actually.
Oh, really?
Who always, and in fact, my granny would always say, and I was walking up Louis Botha Avenue and somebody said, how old are you? And I said, how old do you think I am? And they said, 75, and she was 89. And I'm starting a little bit like, you're a, no. I'm actually just a Zulu girl trapped in the body of a juicy crone. I mean, what can I do?
Juicy crone.
Oh, juicy crone.
I love it. Yeah. So, I mean, is the idea of people asking for someone's age, is that still considered rude?
You know,
by the way. I don't like it when people go, no, guess how old I am, because
no, but you know what's interesting?
I'm going to screw it up, right? There's a 99% chance I'm going to screw it up by a year or five.
Quite good. I can estimate, but because I am of a certain age, and which I'm going to, I never used to have a problem, and then I went to an agency and I mentioned my age, and the oak fell off the chair.
Oh yeah.
Because the nice thing is, in a way, is that particularly white girls, and in some way, from about 40 to about 80, you can't really tell. And of course, when we have our school reunions, all of us wrinkly girls are sitting there, and then
that's a good point. Between 40,
someone
and 80,
in Botox,
you can't actually tell.
You can't really.
You can maybe
estimate,
get within the nearest decade.
Yeah.
But you're right. Like between 40 and 80,
let's say 40 and 70, but I haven't got there yet, so I'll let you know.
No. I mean, you're holding up well. You still wear the coolest glasses in the world.
Well, my entire medical aid is on my face. But an interesting, so the man I've been married to, Munir, it's just been decades. I can't even believe it. But he was turning 52. I was turning 47. We added it up. Yeah. We got to 99.9 and we had our 100th one of the Chinese New Year's some years back.
Yeah.
And we just got over it. So we've turned 100.
And you don't count anymore. You don't worry about
uphill
it.
From there.
It doesn't bother you.
It. You know, I've never been a woman of vanity. I mean, I did put lipstick on for you this morning, but I've never done the makeup, the looking. And then you do look in the mirror and you go, well, okay. Do you know that you can get silicone like lifts for cheeks now and you just shove them on and 25-year-old girls use it?
Really?
So I think the whole aging thing has youthened itself so that 30-year-old girls are having Botox treatments.
Oh, they are.
The 11s.
That's it. And people are saying, you know, it's easy. You've got to get it, and you must get it in your 20s and your 30s, so that you can keep up and stay younger for longer. Yeah. I don't know, huh?
And then you've just got the same expression: grief,
yeah,
joy,
and exactly. And I think also there's something to be said for like looking your age. It's not always a bad thing.
Well, for a woman of your age, you're looking magnificent today.
Thanks very much.
Did you get the Botox last week?
I haven't, but I'm seriously
tempted?
Thinking about it. Well, you know, I mean, this friend of mine who's, and she's not old, and she doesn't look like she needs it, but she says she goes just so that the frown lines don't look so hardcore, you know.
And then you talk about introvert again. Would it make me feel better within myself to look 30 years younger than
Probably
I am?
Probably not.
So I think that there's what do they call it? A dysphoria. It's almost like anorexia.
Yeah,
you look in the mirror
and
think they're fat.
Right.
So I'm not for it, but live and let live.
Yeah. Look,
you've got the money.
No, but I keep saying it. I don't think I'm in it.
I think you're looking gorgeous for 73.
Thanks. 73.
Am I in the right decade?
So tell me about the awards. Did you go to the
Yes, I went to the watch. It was a watch party.
Oh, very good.
Which is kind of the modern way of not having 400 people, you know, drinking. And
yeah,
eating.
And you don't have to get dressed, and they don't have to cater, and you.
Well, there were little burgers, and a couple of drinks. It was actually lovely. We had it at the SA South African Podcast Guild SAPGG, at the SAPGG offices. And so must I talk about the awards?
Yeah, tell me.
The extrovert.
Yeah, absolutely.
So, guys.
go now. Tell me about the awards.
So there were a lot of categories for different kind of genres of communication.
Sure.
And I was actually finalist in 6 categories.
Wow.
Including cover art, which AI helped me with. So thank God I didn't get that. And then what they did, so these, can you see? You're not allowed to look at my breasts, but you can.
No, what are those? Are those the awards?
Yes, they are. And we'll probably do better next year.
So that's what they look like.
So yeah, you'll get yours.
So what do you got there? You got a gold?
So I've got 3 golds and a silver.
Very nice.
So I think it was innovation and creativity. I won.
Congrats. That's excellent.
And then I got a silver in content and then a gold in... can't remember the category anymore.
Well, you got one of your golds was for story time.
Yeah, well,
that one, podcast of the year.
That's quite a big thing.
Oh, look, James has printed us a very,
James,
very beautiful.
You're so cool.
And that looks so great. It looks like an Excel spreadsheet.
Oh,
right.
Okay. So, kids, parenting, and family, because it's a children's podcast. It's a podcast for very small children. So, we got gold in that.
Oh, excellent.
And then in silver in production, and then gold in innovation and creativity, which was very special to me. And then
magic.
I think what the judges did, the way they described it, was they took all the finalists in every category and then judged them. And so I was gobsmacked. So podcaster of the year.
Good.
Look at me.
Well, bloody done.
Thank you very much.
No, I think that's cool. Also think it's cool that these guys have decided to go and establish a podcasting guild. 100%. You know, it's growing into itself.
Yes, and I was told to do a shout thank you to Paolo and the peeps
who
have actually done this, because as we were saying, it's a nascent industry, yet it's been around.
Yeah.
But in the same way that the Academy Awards work, or the Clio's work, or the Oscars. Same thing, right?
It has to start somewhere.
Yeah, and it seems to be ground floor.
Yeah, I think it's good that you establish these things. It gives people a reason to aspire to being better at whatever they're doing. I've always thought, if you're going to do a podcast, and these days, let's face it, they're also, you know, everybody's a podcaster.
Everyone.
You bump into me, kick over a rock, and a podcaster
pops up. And a microphone.
Yeah, exactly. So I say to them, look, unless you're doing something no one else is doing, or you're doing something better than anyone else is doing it, don't bother otherwise.
So you see, we said introvert. The introvert would say, no, that's really not true. You know, I've really worked for years. And then the extrovert goes, guys, and in a way, I assume, because I've been in radio, as you know, since I came out the womb. And this is just another, it's another platform in which audio can actually shine. And I've always had kind of broadcast quality issues. It has to have... if there is a backtrack and there are chorus vocals and there's a narrator, it's got to be mixed properly.
Absolutely.
And in fact, while I was doing my audiobook, these little mouth noises that you can cover up with a jingle, you know, and then my stomach would rumble and then
suddenly
we'd have to do the whole thing again.
Mm-hmm.
So the children's, basically the Solid Gold Story Time is for small children. I believe that children should be sung to and read to in the womb.
I've heard this is almost accepted. Science
and
now,
so
right?
Probably.
If you listen to classical music, your children, I don't know that anyone in my generation was raised by parents who actually did that on purpose. They may have done it by mistake.
Well, you see, my mother told me.
But now you've got mothers who walk around with Mozart playing. They hold the speaker right against their stomach, and
my mother, who lives in Arizona, from whom I got the genes, said to me, "It's such a pity there was no social media when I was 3." Because I was apparently reciting, you know, Beatrix Potter and singing Summertime out the womb. So in a sense, there was an essence.
It's a big performer gene in your family, huh?
Well, like I told you, pulling us out of bed at midnight to perform for the visitors, following in father's footsteps, trained me well. But the whole idea of the heard word, because the heard word is a precursor to literacy and love of literature. 3-year-old can't read.
Okay, so let's talk about this for a second. And I know Monday morning people are waking up. They want to know what's happening in the world. We'll get to all that stuff in a minute. We've got some fun lined up for you later. I've got a couple of clips to show you and some other cool stuff. But while we're talking about books, because I had a chance this weekend to also sort out a couple of books.
And, in your introversion.
You know, they gather a pile.
The TBR file.
Yeah, and then you have to decide now, am I going to read any of these, or are they just going to go on the shelf, or should I give them to someone else? Those are the only options.
Audiobook.
Don't you do them? I do audiobooks. I know you're friends with Stephen Fry.
Well,
friends.
Acquaint.
She's very, friends with very Stephen close. Fry.
He's my very godfather,
The last audiobook I actually listened to and loved, it because he's got such a great voice.
Oh, darling.
Apart from the fact that he writes beautifully.
He's amazing.
He actually narrated his own book Mythos.
Yes.
And then he's written Heroes. Yes. Since
now
then.
He's done Odyssey.
Odyssey.
He's rewritten the Odyssey.
So basically he is doing what the ancient Greek authors did with Greek mythology and retelling it to a new
Absolutely.
Generation, which is magnificent. Mm-hmm. Anyway, that was the last audiobook I read. But while I was going through these books, I suddenly thought, are there that many people who I could give these books to who would actually read them? And this is a problem, right?
It's a big problem.
We've got a publishing industry in this country. We've got bookshops. Ostensibly, they sell more than cooking books. Or even though if you walk into them, it's all cooking books.
Fiction doesn't.
It's all religious books and cooking books, right?
And celebrity memoirs.
And celebrity memoirs. And who wants one more of those?
Well, you did one, didn't you?
No, so I've written two books. The one was like little short observations and things. Mm. The other one was a semi-autobiographical story of kind of radio, then TV, then the internet.
How does it become semi?
Because I really didn't want to write it. So it gave me a semi.
I was just you're nursing a semi.
I enjoyed doing it. They told me that both were bestsellers. I don't know what that means in this country.
1,000?
Is that all it is?
I think in fiction, 1,000 is unbelievable. I think 3,000 is a bestseller here, and then you get to platinum and gold. But I'm sure you sold more than 5,000 books.
We did, but it still made no money.
Oh no!
So if you're going to do it for the money, yeah. If you're going to be an author in South Africa, I wish you luck. I mean, everybody thinks they're going to be J.K. Rowling
or Damon Galgut.
Yeah, the chances are you're going to end up kind of having to.
If you're doing it for the money, don't do it.
Yeah, that's right.
You called from a different place. Do you think, be a copywriter.
So you said something just now about the magic of audio, and this is where radio and books come together. Mm. Is they exercise imagination.
100%.
And one of the things that I didn't like about having to go visual, and I still don't like it, because I would much rather have arrived in like shorts
Your
or tracksuit pants. Or, yeah, and not have worried about kind of is
Did
my
you brush
hair
your teeth?
And yeah, all that sort of shit. Just to focus on the content itself. Mm. Because everyone listening hears the same thing, but they see a different picture
100%
in their head.
Theater of the mind.
Absolutely.
It's always been.
And the same goes for a book. I mean, if you hadn't read Harry Potter, you wouldn't know this, but for everybody who read it before the movies came out, they had a picture in their
Absolutely.
Own heads of what all of those things looked like, what the places looked like, what the people looked like. And I think that like there's a bit of sadness in me that I don't know that that's going to be as big a deal going forward, because now AI will do imagining for you, you know?
I can't.
Right?
Well, it's interesting because I've written for like booky books and I've written so much for radio. I think I write as if it's a radio play. In other words, it has to sound right even if it's on the page.
A lot of description.
Dialogue. Okay. Like love me dialogue.
Okay.
And in fact, I was also told there's too much, I don't know what too much dialogue means, but if you get into a conversation, then you can hear the voices.
Right.
So even for the Storytime podcasts, there's if a child, because maybe they need the visual images, but to hear it and then they hear it over and then they hear it over and then they can pronounce words and they can actually comprehend sentences as it grows, as a child grows. But it's actually my niece who has two little kids doesn't read at all. But as my dear fairy godfather Fry said, you know, he's at some point when people said, you know, the nooks and all of those the platform of digital reading is going to kill books. And he said something to the effect of, darling, it's going to kill books the same way that elevators are going to kill staircases. So in other words, it's another way of bringing your imagination or engaging with imagination. So let's not judge.
Yeah, I don't think that there's a war between audiobooks and books. As long as you are doing one or the other, it's good, right?
But you see, television also just feeds you. Audio, you have to engage in it. It's imagination.
Jittery Cursor says, is the South African writing fraternity? There isn't such a thing. Concerned about AI. I know copywriters, transcribers, and translators who are struggling for jobs. I mean, you've been a copywriter.
It might be a sorority rather than a fraternity. But no. having written a novel, there are things like the Publishing Association of South Africa and places like that. But I've never
been to... You
guys
get together and sacrifice a cat.
Yes,
or...
sometimes. Not cats. You were nearly there. There are pockets.
That's who you sacrifice, is children.
Sometimes, but only lightly salted, you know, the good Chianti. It's quite interesting because having
fava beans and a fine Chianti. Yes, Clarice, that is incidental.
He's going to quote the whole movie now.
Go on.
It's interesting. No, it's interesting. I chose not to have children. Okay. I'm like Silence of the Prams in actual fact.
So you're not
fact.
Barren or anything?
We don't consider ourselves barren, although my friend Will calls us the barren generation.
Do you remember Abraham's wife Sarah in the Bible? She was 90. Barren, right? She was barren.
I've still got a few years
story.
To go.
and I joke with women who say to me, I've chosen not to have kids, because I've also chosen not to have kids. So I'm not sensitive about it. But some people are. And you say to them, you're not barren. And they go,
no. But don't you like Silence of the Prams?
Yeah, that's very
that's
good.
Kind of the way we've
I mean,
done
that's
it.
A nice, you know, you get home. There's no wailing, no responsibilities.
Other people's children are fantastic because they go home to their mummies afterwards.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
Then the interesting part is, I don't want to put anyone off, is because somehow, and I'm going to do the middle age thing again, going through menopause, which I think men go through as well,
okay.
There was a kind of a phase where children's stories started pouring out of me.
How
not
nice.
Particularly like I like them with fava beans, but not suddenly. It was like I reconnected with the little girl who danced on the table when I was six, and my great-grandmother taught my mother songs, who taught us songs, who we taught to the children. So there's a kind of a very theatrical, musical,
I love this.
Nursery
this
rhymey
is,
thing.
This is a little bit...
So I found my inner child.
I think it's quite cool. Actually, very cool. Very exciting, because David Walliams, the guy from Little Britain, right? He's just written this slew of children's books, and he's clearly very good at it. Maybe as a team who help him, I don't want to know how the sausage is made, but... Kids love these books. They absolutely love them.
And it's got humor and sarcasm.
Like, it reminds me of Roald Dahl when I was a kid.
But you see, the good books, the good children's books, are books for adults as well. So when I don't write for, I don't even know who I write for, because the rhymes come out and sometimes the songs come out with the rhymes, but there's always something for the adults. And as a child can grow, they go, oh, was that sarcasm, Mum? Was that irony?
Oh, they're starting to get
it. So in other words, there needs to be a literary factor. In other words, the fiction or the writing has to have layers.
Right.
So that a kid, I mean, Alice in Wonderland, have you read it lately? It's a mind
stuff
blast.
Going on there.
You know, me and he. And in fact, what I've also started doing is like The Owl and the Pussycat, which I wasn't allowed to do for YoTV because it said had the word pussy in it.
Really?
I swear to God.
When you say weren't allowed to do it for YoTV, just explain to people, because
So YoTV is a television program.
No, it was a famous kids program that you're involved in.
And well, I guessed it. And there are two puppets, so there are people under the table, and they're, you know, sarcastic. And I had my guitar and my makeup and everything, and I sang some story songs on there. But I wanted to do The Owl and the Pussycat because I've collaged it, which is something I do just for fun, like little pieces of paper. And I've made it has sung itself. Let's put it that way.
Yeah.
And am I allowed to use that? Isn't CS? It's Owl and the Pussycat went to see. His name will come to me. It's another middle aged thing. But the point is that the lyrics were written 130 years ago, and
Owl and the Pussycat is.
It's him.
It's not Kipling, is it?
No, and I can't believe that we're live on air and I don't remember his name.
Don't worry.
I was going to say, but the point is that it's actually an amazing little kind of magic realism piece written 130 years ago, so it's out of copyright. And for the next season, I would like to introduce unborn children to something that was written nearly two centuries ago.
So this is why this woman's winning awards, by the way.
I have to look up who did the Owl and the Pussycat.
Look it up quickly. So I'm just going to look at some of these comments. Carl says, Gareth, don't you always say that once someone has won, everyone else should just go home? Well done, you're silver, loser. Yeah, well, this show got silver. I'm very proud the Shady Podcast got gold. I can't tell you how happy it makes me when other people are winning. It really, especially when they're in the stable and people like Lynn that I know.
Edward Lear.
Very, very good stuff. Edward. Oh, okay. I wouldn't have got that right.
No. Can you call a friend?
Botulism toxin. What doesn't sound good about that, says Slippery Pickle. Yeah, that's probably true.
What does that even mean?
No, when we were talking about the facelifts and the Botox.
Oh, okay. Oh.
It's but that's what it is. Botox is.
Yeah, you're actually injecting poison.
Yeah, exactly. It's kind of like it's almost it doesn't do the same thing as formaldehyde, but it kind of freezes.
Yes, it freezes the muscles.
Yeah. Not great.
And in fact, the actresses that I see
when
now,
you did a half smile now.
It horrifies me. I'm horrified in the most fascinating. You know, when you like pulled and pushed. But I would like to congratulate you as well on your awards.
Thank
I did
you.
Not I... see you there on Saturday night. You were obviously in your introvert mode.
I was not.
And just tell the viewers and the listeners what were the awards? In what categories were they?
I don't know.
You don't remember.
I have no
either
idea.
Do I.
James, what did we win?
James?
Okay.
Society and
so
culture.
So in other words, the Real Network got first and second in society and culture. Okay, I'm happy with that. Thank you.
Okay, we'll take the win.
Thank you very. Yeah, we'll take the win.
No, absolutely.
I like it. This is very
you
good.
You see, the thing about awards also is, I mean, I said to you the last time, I only win things when I don't know there's a competition. And I actually won Best First Year Camper at Alan Isaac's Camp in 1970-something. I didn't know there was an award. And so I've been trying
for
awards for
won.
The last, absolutely. So it was so unexpected. If you and that's taught me something, because if you want something too much.
Oh, yeah. Then it escapes
it's
you,
gonna,
right?
It's going to screw with you. So it was so surprising to me. I mean, here.
Yeah. They're all four of them.
My trophies.
No, listen, this is, can I tell you why it's important? Because I also, I'm very jaded about awards. I mean, I don't take them terribly seriously. But I do think if people have gone to the trouble of voting for you, whether it's a public vote, which I always take a lot more seriously than if it's a bunch of judges. But if it's a public vote, people have actually WhatsApped or, you know,
they've engaged.
Gone online and joined the poll or whatever. I always like to say thank you because they've taken the trouble to vote. So you can at least take the trouble to say thanks.
There, you could see it the other way, which is, you know, I called all my friends and said, please vote for me. Or a bunch of judges actually knew.
I've never actually done
You've that. Never asked.
No. No, I've never even tried to persuade anyone to vote in an election.
Don't speak.
It's this week, huh?
It's tomorrow.
This is the big week. Yeah. Tomorrow is American Election Day. By the way, I just want to show you, like, the Daily Maverick has obviously completely lost its marbles because this is their cover of their print edition that like three people buy today. America KKKA on full display. I mean,
they're just winding us up.
Look, you could say it's clickbait or whatever else.
It's clickbait.
But I think this is just unbelievably lazy and just so disconnected from reality.
No, but like, when guys, they put both of them on there, so we're not on either side.
KKK, American history is set to begin again.
Drives the whole world.
This is just unbelievable, right? And it's by Trainspot or something or another. Someone who goes by a pseudonym. This time it drags the whole world with it as if that's not how every American election before has
exactly.
been.
Exactly.
You know, I remember Al Gore and George W. Bush.
The Chads.
Yeah, we were involved, whether we liked it or not, right?
But that was the Chads that led them to the automatic.
The first black president, Bill Clinton. Do you remember that? Remember? That was a big deal.
So my family, my mother married an American. They've been there for decades.
Yeah, you said in Arizona.
Arizona, L.A.,
Arizona
Maryland.
Is one of the swing states.
I know.
Your
but she's the only Democrat in the state.
At 90 years old.
But she told me when she phoned me to tell me how thrilled she was that we had won these awards because mom, you know.
Sure, of course. Even at 90, she's
mom,
proud of
oh,
it.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Because we have a lot of doctors who emigrated kind of in the 60s and 70s and 80s. They wouldn't tell people to come live in America. In fact, my brother in L.A., has often said to me, what's your plan B, Lynn? For when we're taken over.
What, like when South Africa goes to shit?
When Julius comes and takes my home.
I love that when that's coming from people who's like, they've got to have a
plan B. Oh, I said to him, what's your plan B, dude?
No, exactly.
Coming to live in my spare room.
But when when either Donald or Kamala come to power, and they've told us that either of them are going to be the end of America, right? You speak to anyone who's a Democrat, they will tell you, oh my God, you know, if Donald Trump wins, even though he's been president already, if he wins, it's just going, everything, the flames, the Nazi rallies at Madison Square Gardens.
But don't you think that in a way,
and the converse, is true. The Republicans are saying, I'll tell you, if Kamala wins, kiss this country goodbye. Going down the toilet.
But don't you think, because we were talking about Obama coming in 08, was it? Which seems like a million years ago. And you go 15 years later, where every single person actually has a voice. Don't you think that the whole social
Obama's
media...
And fucking Obama's still out there campaigning.
Fucking Obama.
Can't he just can't he take a break? Come on, dude. I mean, every other president knows, even George W. Bush, who had the brain of a squirrel, we're told, even he knew, good idea to just go to your ranch.
I think there's a desperation.
Ride horses and things. Mm. There's a desperation. That's the problem, right? Is that these Democrats are like, they're nervous as hell.
We are.
You are. No, I know you're.
We said we would not speak of the war, but yes.
No. But I mean, politically, it's interesting to know. And I know you're on the left. I know you've
I can't help it. It's so, and it's so interesting about, what do they call it? When confirmation bias.
Yeah.
So if I hate Trump, everything he says, I have to hate. And then he says something that I kind of sort of agree with. I can't do that.
No.
I can't say that.
No, God forbid.
You know, Melania's not pretty.
Did you hear the thing that he said last week, which was also just taken completely out of context? I mean, right now.
The garbage truck, for
right
example.
Right now, both sides are, and I hate the both sides thing, but it's true. Mm. Both sides are absolutely maximizing whatever is being said.
Absolutely.
And just, they're not even slanting or tilting it. They're turning it upside down wherever they can. So he said something innocuous like, I'm going to protect women, you know, from
whether they like it or not.
Whether they like it or not. And then you had a bunch of like feminists screaming. They're like, I don't want you to look after me.
I'm done with it,
Donald Trump.
I'm done.
And then Kamala said, or Joe Biden, obviously, with the garbage thing, that's also gone crazy.
That was a real.
Everything's been turned into a big story, even if it's nothing.
Or a show.
A show. It's a
show.
Did
you see the garbage truck?
Yeah, of course.
I mean, you see, and I saw the garbage truck.
Brilliant marketing, right?
Completely.
Genius marketing.
Guerrilla marketing.
So clever. Tactical activation.
But he really does need help with his makeup.
Oh, my God, yeah. Somebody's got to sit down and just tell him, like, you've got to have Donald, and I'm no expert.
He's got no gay friends.
The white eyes, like the raccoon eyes.
Yeah, no.
And then the orange, right?
He doesn't have any gay friends, so, because someone would have told him.
If he's watching, I don't think he is.
Don.
What would you tell him? Blend.
You see, I'm not, in fact, it's quite interesting because I don't wear a lot of makeup.
Yeah,
my makeup is. And in fact, I say to my husband, do I look like Donald Trump? Because if you don't have, you went one stage makeup. You have to blend when
TV,
you've got light hair and light skin.
No, I look,
and
then look like a vampire if I don't.
I would say Donald blend, and I would say, you see, I also, the hair, so.
So your orange glasses are not a dog whistle of support
to Donald
Trump.
I do have blue as well. I do have blue cat's eyes, but I lost them because I can't see without my glasses to find them.
But you know what? What's so funny is that Wednesday will roll around, whoever's won, and they'll probably still be counting for another week because there's going to be this one.
On. Oh, yeah.
You know, like our elections, you know the next day who the winning party is. You know who's won.
Because of the
don't swallow the smoke.
No, I'm not.
She's vaping. It's okay. She's allowed
vaping,
to vape.
I don't. And it's an.
It's not an airplane.
Vape.
You're allowed.
No,
to.
But it's not a hash vape. I would never have come on here with a.
But
hash
you have. I mean, you're famously a weed smoker.
I was. Am I?
Well, I don't know. You told me earlier.
No, in fact, I on Friday night, my goddaughter lent me her Heeb vape.
Oh yeah.
And I didn't know what the dose was because you know we just like smoke, and I was out of my mind.
Really. Stronger than what you used to?
Because you're puffing it like a vape. So it's like you're kind of hyperdosing. What do they call it? Microdosing, hyperdosing.
Yeah, hyperdosing.
But I can go buy it in the shops now. So is it legal? In fact, it's quite an interesting thing because they say, write drunk, edit sober, which is a very interesting creative way. Imagine, so your imagination and do whatever you want.
Can you write drunk?
Not drunk, but a little wake and bake. Never did anybody
I used to write a column every week, even if it was just for my website. A lot of times it was for someone else.
That's PT.
And sometimes I'd just experiment. Like I'd try and write drunk, and I'd try and write sober. I never did any like hallucinogens or anything, because I don't think I could write.
I think the words would just go
like all over the place. But I don't think my drunk ones are that different, actually.
This is a very open audience, right?
Go ahead.
So if with a tiny little wake and bake, and I'm going to be arrested now. And never
you won't be arrested. That stuff's legal now.
In other words, so say, for example, you meditate. Because I did yoga for many years until the yogi became a rapist and I just didn't breathe out anymore.
Your yogi became a rapist?
The Kundalini yoga. Yeah. Dude, and I would put that out there. Yogi Bhajan.
You mean the guy who started the movement?
The guy who started the movement, right, who then died.
Actual yogi here. No, they was were women. That would be bad.
No, that would be, but then it's kind of like horrific. The same thing.
Okay, but the Kundalini guy, what was his
Yogi
name?
Yogi Bhajan was his name. He was a customs inspector. He came, he took the whole West Coast by storm. But he was raping his little girls. That's the part you fear the most.
What a dreadful man.
And so having been so...
It's a cult, right?
Well, you see...
I mean, isn't that definition cult?
Absolutely. Yeah. But I didn't want to throw the baby out of the bathwater. They're Sikhs.
Right. Okay. So they wear the
and
turbans.
I liked the meditation and I liked the movement. And then I found out you had to sort of take a picture of the guru and then meditate on him. And I didn't like that. So I thought I'll take what I need. But when this all happened, I was so horrified that I'd been so close to the cult. But why I'm saying that is I would get up 4:30, brush tongue with brush your tongue, take a bandage and swallow it and pull it. I didn't do all of that.
Oh,
but
there's a whole ritual.
Cleansing, drink your urine.
Jesus.
I didn't do that.
But what drink your urine?
There are those.
Wow.
I'm not necessarily, I've never tried it, but why I'm
so
saying that is
that
if I go into another, if I did my meditation and then went to the desk, it's almost a similar but different sense of awake and bake, because I'm now in the zone. If you like. So I would use the meditation and the flex and the discipline to get to the writing.
This is important because I often get into discussions with people. You know, we find out, for example, that our favorite singer is not such a nice guy when the cameras go off.
Oh yeah.
And I've never disliked a Michael Jackson song just because people said he was a pedophile. Yeah, I still listen to it, and I can differentiate between the talent as expressed in the music, which puts me at more than an arm's length away from anything that he did, and the person himself, who I never got to meet.
But look at Picasso.
So why did you get upset about the Kundalini dude? And I mean,
So my father died on Valentine's Day in 2020, and this report, it was called the Olive Branch Report, came out at exactly the same time. So because he's, and I'm allowed to.
You can say whatever you want.
And I had been teaching the girls who worked for me, my staff, who were mainly young black women.
Yeah.
I'd been doing yoga every single Thursday. You were there at 8 o'clock. If you're not there, you're locked out of the room. Oh, in my whites, it was, totally.
Okay.
But when the whole report came out, one of my girls said to me, oh, no wonder he was putting us in positions where he could see our pussy. So because I'm not going to do a yoga move for you now, but if you actually want to know, lotus pose.
Okay.
So then I began to kind of re-engineer what was really going on.
This guy's just a pervert.
And then, a pervert who was celibate, who then raped his women, who was pure, and then showed them pornography. I mean, I'll show you. The report was, and of course.
He was a predator.
Yes. Yeah. He was a predator who then brought people in to protect him, and the people who protected him, he violated.
Don't you love that line from Shakespeare's King Lear, that the policeman who wants to arrest the whore has a burning desire to use her?
100%.
So it's this idea that
back to people, Donald.
Well, it's this interesting idea that people who are most who want to be seen to be the best people, the most moral, the most ethical, the most decent, the most upstanding, the kind of respectable people who should lead, you know, the community. Those are always the creepy ones underneath.
But look at the Catholic Church.
Yeah, yeah,
look
yeah.
Look at, you know, yes, all of these exactly. secrets, men in dresses, which is kind of how I see them with beards.
Yeah, aging men in dresses. And we know, like, I saw a headline the other day that apparently sex at the Vatican is just
everywhere,
through the roof at the moment. They can't. It's turned into just an orgy.
Yeah, look at the Medicis.
Yeah.
They've been doing it for hundreds of years.
Right.
The very fact that Catholic priests are not all, but that celibate Catholic priests violate little boys blows my mind. And yet, of course, you're going to be celibate, you're going to be this, you're going to be that, but actually here comes...
Thou dost protest too much, is the other
But back to your point about... So Michael, I don't know whether Michael Jackson did a little kids. I think that his childhood was traumatic. I think that he might have...
Sure, it sounds like he had a shit time.
But listen to Thriller again. I remember when Thriller came out.
What a great album.
Wah.
Right?
And you know who took the credit for that? Quincy, which he probably did because... Do you remember Off the Wall?
Yeah.
I actually heard an interview where he said, I did that hook. That album would have done nothing without my production. And back to podcasting again. And have you watched the We Are the World documentary?
No, but that I remember that song.
Michael was seminal. It wasn't a very good song, actually.
No, but do you know what I did listen to over the weekend? It came up in my playlist that I was listening to on Saturday night. Was Somebody's Watching Me, which is Rockwell. Which was Quincy's son. And he basically strong-armed Michael into singing, I always feel like somebody's watching me. Right? Because
he owed his dad.
Because Michael would have made the song a hit. There's no way Quincy's son would have been able to do that without the Michael
vocal.
That's
the schmooze.
Huck, but I mean, poor Michael. The guy was definitely victimized. I remember stories about his dad. Telling all of them, right, you boys, now pick up those bricks on that side of the yard and you're going to move them over to that side of the yard. And they'd go, what are we doing for dad?
Why, daddy?
And he'd go, just because I told you to.
That's like the
now,
army.
Don't you give me no words. I'll beat you with a switch.
That's the army.
It was like that.
Go pick
right?
that leaf
stupid,
off that tree.
Right? Just but stupid. The poor kid, he was like 4 or 5 when he started being paraded like you. Forced out of bed to entertain the people.
But I'm going to tell you, Michael, so my sister was 2.5 years younger than me and we lived in Scotland and England. And my sister discovered the Jackson 5. We both did, but I'll give her the credit.
Okay.
And so she had all these little black boys on her wall. Now, remember, we were ex-South Africans.
Yeah.
We didn't know there was any sort of thing as prejudice. My sister was dark.
Who was your favorite?
Oh, Michael. Always.
Michael.
Which one was the one who
didn't Jermaine die the other day?
Yes, he did.
Jermaine,
Marlon, I knew them
Tito.
All. And T-Rex.
Jackie.
And Mark Bolan. And when we came here in the early 70s, it was like, get it on, bang it gone, get it on. And Top of the Pops and Jimmy Savile. I mean, that's where I grew up. So, and George Michael Eichel, one of the best songwriters. Look what he did with Wham. I mean, I'm surprised he survived that at all.
Yeah, that's true. Okay, but the point is, that because they went through all of that doesn't make it right that they were weird and potentially, we're going to say for Michael, because we never really
knew,
potentially doing disgusting, criminal, or inappropriate things. I can still separate the music out and love the music without having to be upset that the person was a shit.
Do you listen to R. Kelly still?
Of course I listen to R. Kelly sometimes, not as often as I used to when
I'm not crazy
he was a thing.
For that.
But I don't like R. Kelly. You see, if just because an R. Kelly song comes up, doesn't mean that I'm a massive fan of his lifestyle. You know,
no, but
same
that's,
goes
can
for
you
Diddy,
separate
who's,
the,
I mean, look at the Diddy thing, right? I mean,
Diddy and now J-Lo's involved.
J-Lo. Did you see her crying to try and get votes for Kamala? She's like, oh my God, you got to vote for Kamala because otherwise she's going to take over. They're going to take away our.
Our reproductive rights, you
see. Abort our children. If I don't want to have grandchildren, that's up to me. And it shouldn't be up to the government. And she was crying. And I'm like, yeah, we're going to trust your judgment.
Okay, yeah, now I'm going to vote for Kamala because you.
Diddy's girlfriend.
But that's the industry. So you must have been tempted by drugs and women. You know, I mean, in fact, the Justin Bieber thing freaks me out about more than anything because they took him in as a teenager and then all fake media.
So what bothers me, it's like I never like the idea of duress. I never like the idea that someone's being forced to do something because I'm a rebel for no reason most of the time. So if you tell me you must do this, then I don't want to do it.
It's called Dafka in our
culture.
That's
it, Dafka.
I will not because you told me to.
Right, in Yiddish, Dafka. So if you tell me I mustn't do this, that's all I want to do.
Me too.
right? And
I know.
I think that there are
or you can't.
So as a result, when people try to force other people to do things, I'm out. And I think there's something so wrong with duress, whether it's certainly underage people, certainly women who are not in a position to argue about things. Like there's power play,
like that
going
French
on,
woman
violence,
who was,
or,
you know, the French woman who had the husband get 75 men to stup her while she was unconscious.
Oh Jesus, I didn't know that. You've ruined my morning.
No, it's
that
it's
was a thing.
Pellicott, it's still on. She was drugged to unconsciousness, and the husband had a deep fake account, and men would come to her house and rape her in her sleep. And she's come out to say, she's about 71, 72 now.
Wow.
And then you've got to look at the French psyche, because the French aren't so fussed about pederasty as we are. You know,
consent generally, right?
Well, I've never been seduced by a friend. In fact, when I was traveling with my friend Merle.
Oh, we got Dr. Hanan.
The blondes were.
Let's not waste his time. Listen, we went to him so late last time that I'm going to get into trouble
I'll just vape outside.
Thanks for the lunch on Saturday. I told everyone I was cured, and some people actually thought like I had a problem. They didn't know I was joking. So someone sent me a message afterwards, said like, oh my God, cured of what? I was like, all my mental health issues, all of them. So thanks for lunch on Saturday.
No, that was great fun. No, you got the seal of approval. You are mentally healed.
All right, so let's look at this quickly. When you look at your family tree, what kind of patterns do you see? Generational patterns of addiction, suicide, violence, and or hospitalizations are important for a therapist to be aware of. So this doesn't come from an email or anything, but I think it's worth reflecting on this stuff, because you could inherit certain things. You might inherit other things. There might be problems that come from the genes. How much of that plays into someone's overall mental health? Because you often hear people say, oh no, I'm like this because my mom and my gran and my aunt, and they're all like this. Is that a thing?
Yeah, well, as you know, the approach is not to look navel gaze and blame and play victim. The approach is actually what I do and what can I do to make my life better.
Mm-hmm.
As therapists, we are looking at patterns. We are looking at temperaments. You know, there are certain things that limit your ability to move from point A to point B. There's certain restrictions, whether it's physical restrictions, medical restrictions, psychiatric mental restrictions that stop you from getting from point A to point B. But we're looking at patterns. We're looking at the way that you've modeled your world. Because I always tell parents, it doesn't matter how young your kids are, they are always observing and they are always recording what you're doing, and naturally kids copy and paste. They see how the world works through you, and they go and find a way to repattern that and find a way to replicate that. And they repeat what they see. So we are looking at patterns. We are looking at how you grew up. We are looking at the way your parents interacted, and never mind your genetic limitations, let's call it, but your psychological patterning of the way you saw the world and how you engaging the world looking forward.
So, I mean, I've heard these stories, and they've done research on twins. That, I mean, you know, people used to be so cruel, and used to take a set of twins, separate them, have one family raise the one twin, another family raise the other twin, and then compare them later to see how much of it was nurture and how much of it was nature. And this is something that they thought, oh, no, it's not a problem. We'll just take these children and ruin their lives. And they did discover that actually the nurture part is probably much more important when it comes to behavior. Would you stand by that, Doc? I mean, is that something that you've picked up in the research?
Definitely, 100%. So what happens is our genetic makeup influences our temperaments, the energy that we put onto the world. Some people are like the Duracell bunny. Other people are much more placid. So the way you engage with the world, and certainly your medical makeup, is made up from largely genetics. But how you engage the world, that is going to do with nurture. That is going to do with what you've learned, what you've observed, what you've experienced. Parents have a lot more to add to their kids' lives in terms of patterning than the genetic disposition. So it's not like your child is born and boom, that's, you know, the their future is predetermined by their genetics. And I'm talking about their mental health. Their mental health is largely dictated by what they've seen, what they've observed, what they've experienced. And interestingly, you know, people don't know this, but the brain consumes 20% of the energy that you expel in the day. And the brain's function is really to keep your body in a state of a resource so you can deal with whatever obstacle comes along. So it's there to conserve energy. And there's certain things that put you at a metabolic surplus, and there are certain things that put you in at a metabolic expense. Mm-hmm. So we discussed the coin theory many times. So your brain really wants to conserve as many coins as it possibly can. That's why your brain really likes to stay in its comfort zone. Your brain really wants to stay at home and eat chips and watch TV and Netflix because it doesn't require much energy. And your brain doesn't like to expel energy going to the gym and doing things outside of your comfort zone. And one thing that is metabolically very expensive is remodeling or relearning your model of the world. So what ends up happening, Gareth, is that we are born into this world and our parents show us how the world works. They model our world for us. We wear these goggles that tell us what we can, what we should, what we are allowed to do, what the restrictions are. It models the world for us. And the moment we develop the model, the brain really wants to stick to that model at all cost. It will reject anything that rejects that model, and it will accept anything that confirms that model. So parents have a massive responsibility to develop a model for their kids, because their kids are likely to pursue and continue and build on that model as opposed to change it down the line, regardless of whether that model is healthy or unhealthy.
Hmm. You agree with that? I hear you nodding along there.
What you've brought out in me, so I was raised in this in very strange, dramatic home. And when we came to South Africa in my early teens, I was kind of given to the grandparents as such. I had a second set of parents, very mythical. And they were straight-laced, down the line, discipline, notes on my pillow, cleaning my room. And if I look back on it, in a sense, I was reprogrammed to a degree.
Exactly.
The genetics all came from mom and dad, mm-hmm. but granny and papa made me what I am today because I learned things like compassion. I learned things like consideration for others. I learned things like my cultural history, because I lived amongst them. So is it, and yet I can default to my insanity at the drop of a hat.
Yes, you can.
Do you think that it's possible to reprogram the second set of parents' idea?
Well, what happens is we're born into this world, let's call it a blank slate. We don't have an inkling or give any value to really anything dangerous or safe. So that's why we can put a snake next to a baby or a lion next to a baby, and the baby doesn't react because it doesn't have any beliefs or any modeling of what a lion or a snake is. So we develop our modeling, our goggles, the way we see the world through life experiences. That's how the programming begins. And interestingly, your brain will resist changing the programming at all costs. Even if the new programming could be better and set you off for a better life, your brain doesn't care. That's why I always say we don't create what we want, we repeat what we know, because it's very metabolically expensive to change your model of the world. But now people come to therapy and they go, well, how do I change my model of the world? Because my current model is not working. The way I'm conducting myself, my behaviors, my habits, my instincts are just not working for me. I'm not able to get what I want. I keep on repeating what is familiar to me. And the only way to reprogram the goggles, the program, the model of the world is through the opposite life experience, not through logic, not through me telling you, not through you saying it to yourself in the mirror every morning, because that your brain doesn't hold as fact. What your brain really wants is to reprogram itself through the experience. And the aim of my therapy or therapy in general is to immerse somebody in a brand new experience where the brain has to develop a brand new model. The beautiful thing about experience is that it's so powerful that whether you want to believe it or don't want to believe it, you're going to believe it. In other words, it's outside of your willpower. It's outside of what you want. So we are able to reprogram your brain even outside of your conscious awareness or willingness to do so.
Okay, because I've always called myself an experience junkie. Yeah. I have to try it on to know whether it works or whether it doesn't. But with the grandparents, I became a hell of a rebel. know, they would take my kaftan out and use it for rags. I take it back, sew it up. Granny wanted me to, you know, twin set and pearls, don't laugh too much. So in fact, it was something to rebel against. There was grist to the mill, if you would call it that. But the experiences are also choices based on the nurture nature thing.
Yeah, I'm also fascinated by something that Lynn brought up now, that she learned to be more compassionate from her grandparents. Now, do you think that these are things that need to be taught, that people aren't just good? Because this goes to human nature, right, Doc? And it's an ongoing conversation I have with so many people I know. Are humans inherently good, or are we inherently bad? Or is that just such a stupid and simplistic way to see things? Because you have to be taught to care, to be shown. Considerate.
So you have to be shown.
Yeah, you have to learn these things. They're not things that are there from the beginning.
No, but Doc, you know better, but the actual example that they set for me was something that I could absorb and then rebel against or rebel towards.
Sure.
But loving an unlovable woman, my grandmother would not be told, I love you. She just wouldn't have it. So towards the end, I would just climb into bed and sing her love songs. Wow. And I learned to love the unlovable. Maybe it was sort of payback for rescuing me. But I mean, what is your take on this?
Good or bad, humans?
So, you know, I always say that the universe is the great equalizer. You know, when we are born into this world, the world will teach us certain things. So, for example, if my mom and dad teach me to be unkind, well, whatever that means, I'll get out into the world and I'll start playing with other kids, and the kids will naturally reject me. So what ends up happening through play, through engagement with the real world, is that the real world will actually teach me this is appropriate and this is not appropriate.
Right.
This does work and this doesn't work. This will get you accepted and this will get you rejected. And, you know, you can bash your head only enough times against the wall until you learn that I've got to play differently. Oh. And once we learn how to play, then we actually become accepted in the group, in the design group or the predetermined group that we actually want to engage with. So the world will teach us. So it's not just mom and dad, which is our primary caregivers, and actually they're the most important, the first port of call in terms of setting up our model, but the world will do so as well. And when you learn to engage with other kids, they will teach you this is kind, and kindness will get you to play the game. Unkindness will get you rejected.
Can you connect the play of children to, in a sense, the play we were talking about, creativity, imagination, the ability to kind of have a sense of self, if you would call it that, which comes out of play, but then becomes almost private play. So, for example, if you're lured towards being a dancer or a writer or an actor or the creative process in the adult, do you think that is part of the thread that you pull out from child's play when you were doing it
Definitely.
When you were a kid?
No question. Actually, the ability and the learning how to play with other kids and being comfortable in a group and knowing that I'm accepted the way that I am, and I can, it's a back and forth. We're playing tennis. So I serve you, you serve me, I give you coin, you give me coins back, will actually give you permission to do exactly the same with yourself. People that actually, we know from research, that have bad playing habits with others have terrible bad playing habits with themselves. They don't like to play with themselves. They actually don't play with themselves well. They don't like themselves. They look in the mirror and don't approve of who they are. But people who can play with others can play with themselves much better.
Not on air.
Yeah, not playing with yourself, as in, we're not talking about masturbation here, Doc. Let's just be clear.
Hands
all right?
above the
we've
table.
Got to be clear.
All right, just we've got to be clear. I saw a comment from Pat, from Pat just now. Pat said she's raised two kids. My late parents brought us three siblings, taught us to be kind, considerate, and compassionate, which we've instilled into our two adult married kids. Well, I've met your children, and they are not those things, Pat. You failed. I'm kidding. I don't know who Pat is. It was just
don't call us. We'll
right
call
now,
you.
Right now, she just went, what? Immediately, she lost all her compassion and kindness just for a second there. All right. Listen, Doc, thank you very much. We'll check in with you next week. And I promise you we won't be late. Thank you. Dr. Herman Bushkin. Very, very good.
Thank you.
Had a nice lunch with him. And listen, beautiful. Thanks for coming in.
Thank you
this morning.
For the time.
We've really
space.
Bounced all over the place, but congrats
beautiful.
On the awards.
Thank you very much.
That's a very, very big deal. And obviously your Storytime Award, three different awards for just
four.
That. four for that podcast.
And in fact, I won the podcast award for the children's category in the African Podcast and Voice Awards, which is a pan-African. So it's actually the best children's story in Africa.
Absolutely brilliant. No, I love it.
Can I shout out to Solid Gold Podcast, who took me into the family? And I'm the prodigal daughter returning from all of my sound experience into this. And thank you, Mr. Introvert. I'd like to spend Saturday night with you sometime.
Don't get too cheap. All right.
Give me
thank
a Fitbit.
You.
Thank you.
Thank you, Lynn Jaffe. You. Very, very good. Lynn Jaffe, our guest for the first hour this morning. Got lots of cool stuff on the way. James is going to update us on sport because we haven't done that yet. And there's plenty more still to come. Don't go anywhere. It's just after 7:00.